Hello and welcome to The Specialist. I'm your host, Rob Barnard, and in this episode I'll be talking with someone, although is not a broker or a lender, a distributor or a solicitor, is a really well-known figure in the UK's specialist mortgage market. Someone who's undoubtedly become many lenders' go-to if they're looking to recruit new talent. Owner of Virtus Search, Pete Gwilliam. Pete has a long and successful career in recruitment, but his early days were spent on the lender side of the fence, and we'll be discussing that with him shortly. I'm really looking forward to getting under the bonnet of how the recruitment game has changed over time, how you can make yourself stand out from the crowd, and also to finding out just a little bit more about Pete himself. Not only by talking about his favourite Best Bitter and go-to karaoke song, but also touching on the charitable interests that are close to his heart. Pete, I am absolutely delighted to have you on air with me today.
Really a pleasure and a privilege to be here. Thank you, Rob.
Good. So, Pete, you're obviously a well-known individual in the specialist mortgage market, but for anyone listening that maybe doesn't know you, can you bring your career highlights to life for me? So from those very early days at Avco and Lloyds Bank to where you are today, one of the best and most respected specialist headhunters in the mortgage sector.
It's perhaps really quite important to start with what I've learnt through that period, because I think it actually is really encapsulated what I want to stand for and what I hope I do stand for. I think the three lessons that I look back on are that culture fit and belonging are absolutely essential to how you feel about what you're doing, but how you perform in what you're doing. Look at the actions and judge the actions of others, not their words. And absolutely guilty of this twice, paid consequences for it. Don't make decisions when emotions and testosterone, I might add, are running high. They're never the best decisions. And I'll link that just into a little bit of the question that you probably asked me. I left university in 1988. I got very much a view of, I don't know exactly what my career looks like, but what I do know, the commonality of everything I've learned through the jobs I've done through uni, through my university experience, I want to be in people environments. I got very, very much a philosophy of go and just meet lots of different employers and take away what you can from those experiences by both learning skills at interview and all the different assessment tools that we use. And hopefully by creating choice, you'll make a decision.
So after Lloyds...
Avco.
Was that right?
Avco was amazing.
And did I see Twickenham branch?
You did, and I'll explain that one. And it was one of the decisions I do look back on with pride. After announcing my arrival on the sort of management development program in due course that I'd earned the right to be on, I got to a point where I was given three offers: Burton, Worcester, and a regional manager who'd heard of me becoming a bit of a name on the Midland scene tapped me up and said, I've got this really run-down branch in Twickenham that nobody's really very interested in.
He was selling it to you, wasn't he?
But I do think it's got such an upside that if you really came and invested in it, and what's said of you is true, you'll absolutely set the place on fire. And I took the bold decision. My wife was willing and very grateful, supported me and moved down with me, which I think was such a key part of being able to invest in the role in that way, because I think in every relationship it's about it working for both of you, not just working for you individually. And yeah, you know, within 2 years Twickenham was branch of the country. Whenever dignitaries flew in from the States, okay, Heathrow's close by, so it helps, but you know, I was the branch that was showcased. And yeah, it was a really great time and really taught me a lot about myself, because certainly by the age of 25, I was owning a P&L of £6-7 million worth of asset. And, you know, you find and you learn things, and you have to very quickly.
But I think that's showing there, isn't it? Very early in your career, take yourself out of your comfort zone. Worcester or Burton, a commute from home would have been simple. Mm-hmm. But you push yourself out of your comfort zone to go to Twickenham. So.
Yeah, but sadly what that meant was I chose Guinness then instead of bitter. Oh, and mate. I probably put on 3 stone mm-hmm. in 3 years, because
Guinness, that's what you did.
Guinness just seemed to sit on my stomach differently to how bitter it did.
So after Avco, yeah. Sort of, what was the sort of, was there a light bulb moment that you thought, you know what, need to do something different? Recruitment, you remember those Loughborough University days? And
I'd had a couple of calls from headhunters who tried to tempt me away to the likes of HFC, Beneficial, and other consumer finance lenders. And the more I sort of processed their art or what they were trying to achieve, and was arriving at this point of, I don't think this journey's got any more in it for me, and the opportunity to exit under redundancy came, I was pretty clear that the first place I was going to go and knock the door of was one of the firms that had been trying to headhunt me, because somewhere in me I thought I could have moved me if I'd have asked and approached this differently, and therefore if I can go into recruitment and apply that logic, I'm just going to move more people than the guy who is the leading guy in this firm. And yeah, back yourself, immerse yourself, learn. First year I was nowhere near being able to live up to that high bar I'd set myself to become the best biller in that office, but by the end of year two I was. And
what sector was that, Pete?
So this, yeah, actually good point, let me bring it back. But we're talking 98, 99, and it's really before intermediation became as significant, and indeed before really specialist lending in its own right was born.
Central lending probably was bubbling around,
more,
wasn't it?
More but the not phrase. Specialist. Well, there was the Scott Life Mortgage yep. Desk and those types of environments, but we didn't carry this label of a specialist lending sector. And I think what happened is that by listening and observing and shadowing to grow into how those guys were operating, with a really, really positively intense 6-month training cycle, internal, external trainers, bolting on skills and looking and perceiving at what they were doing, I really attached to the fact I wanted to find a market that was yet to be fully exploited, and my growth and that market's growth become symbiotic. And hence, through a lot of different twists and turns of what you have to do in recruitment, which is get out there, talk. More importantly, get out there, ask questions and listen and learn. I got a couple of really interesting gigs helping, well, first of all, GMAC develop their footprint away from the old private label days yep. into becoming a specialist lending force. So in concluding my time with Humana International, having risen to become the top biller in that office, but again, to the point of looking for actions, not words, took a decision to go away with 5 others from that firm and start our own business. And it was absolutely such a rewarding journey to go on. Venator's Business Intelligence was what we called ourselves, as you might recall, mm-hmm. VBI. But where I'd failed to allow the emotion to subside sufficiently to process the actual integrity of the decision, I probably didn't realise until 3 years in where I was the top performer in that business, yet I had conceded in my haste to want to go and be so-called independent. I had conceded so much in the various shareholders' agreements that I hadn't done enough due diligence on to feel completely, almost completely taken advantage of by a set of legalese positions that didn't favour me whatsoever. And you reap what you sow, don't you? And, you know, hence, you know, I reflect a lot on that, because we saw a vision, we saw a dream, and we put a lot of emotional investment, a lot of physical cash investment into building a business infrastructure that I envisaged would allow us to just become the untouchable specialist recruitment force in mortgages.
And then. I mean, as I say, we've known each other, Pete, for many years, yep. and you've helped me build sales team at many of the lenders I've worked at. But I get the feeling that it's not just specialist lending that's changed and evolved over time, but also the recruitment process, lenders' expectations, and indeed the candidates themselves and their career aspirations. Is that the case? Have things changed on your side of the fence as much as they have on mine?
Well, digitisation changes everything and has shown to change most. And I do think the fundamental change that's more welcome from my perspective than just digitization is that increasingly more people are focused upon the behavior and the skills of the individuals now rather than purely who they've worked for before and what their lived experiences have been. And I welcome that. I totally embrace that. I think it's bizarre that you're kind of hired on the basis of your knowledge, but then fired on the basis of your behaviour, but you don't actually spend time assessing behaviour and attitudes within the recruitment cycle. That's just always been an incongruous sort of position that I observe. But I think what hasn't changed, I'll nod to a couple of things that have, but what hasn't changed, recruitment is still ultimately what it's always been in its purest sense. A firm is trying to hire someone to help them achieve their objectives, and through that has to be able to broadcast and position what its offering is. An individual is looking to grow their platform, grow their profile, grow their skills, grow their earnings potential, grow their careers, and is looking for the best facilitator of that, best employer for that. That hasn't changed, and I don't see how even AI and anything else will change that, because it is still the same uniqueness of what makes relationships and commitments to employee-employer relationships cement themselves. Coming back to my former points of, you know, belonging being as important as anything else. And I think if you then sort of take how digitization has started to almost challenge that, but challenge it without actually fundamentally interrogating, I think, why it's challenging it, other than it's more cost efficient. And it isn't a question of it's a race to the bottom, but it is a question of perspective. The irony I find is that I really only work with intermediary lenders. I do the occasional bit with distributors. I don't work the direct channels. They really don't interest me. But also, I think intermediation's proved to be, yeah, the way that we offer best value to consumer, to client. But the irony is, the businesses that strike out with their talent teams are effectively adopting a tied advice approach, because they are only going to manage and deal with a small segment of people that have responded to an advert or sit within their immediate domain of reachability. Whereas I like to think my knowledge, my community, my network, and indeed the method, which comes back to the Humana methodology, actually gives you whole of market and gives you the opportunity to almost challenge what your prior held views of what the team needs by looking at an array of different perspectives. And I find that again, then you get into this incongruous position of there are businesses that are talking about diversity, and whilst they might create an inclusive advert, they're still only able to circle around the candidates that are in the response pool rather than ask themselves, where would I really like to see fresh ideas and fresh input coming from? Okay. And that's the riddle that I constantly have to try and unpick and try and solve. But digitization in its own right, by the very virtue of what LinkedIn is, which is a great big database in the sky, marginalizes some of the tools that we used to be able to lever. If I turned up at a meeting in 2005, before internet had really taken off in the form and LinkedIn really wasn't born, the database I could open up on a very old laptop that might take forever to fire up with however many dongles required was the most impressive piece of intuitive, that's why you should use Pete Gwilliam, because he knows everything there is to know, every nook and cranny of and different shades of what the intermediary lending sector was. And it was much easier in those days because it was much smaller. But that in its own right was just such an important sales tool. That sales tool's gone now, because clearly everyone can claim to, I am connected to, or I can get connected to, the same people that are within your database.
Yeah, but Pete, let's have it right. I mean, you've worked with me for me together on projects for many, many years, and what I always think you did right was you would do the hard work for me. You'd go and get me a shortlist,
take the pain away.
And you used to say to me, and I think it was true in nearly every single case that we had this, that you'd put three candidates in front of me, and I could take any one of the three. And that comes down to your research and what you do differently.
That's method two. I coin a phrase quite often these days, probably because my capacity is limited to just remember certain phrases. But I do think there is also this fundamental point of being the best path of least resistance, what is missed in the whole cost related argument is the hidden cost. And there are so many hidden costs in not making the correct recruitment decision. Yeah, hidden cost number one. However many people apply to an advert, you have to manage all of the responses with consideration and ideally with some element of constructive feedback to let applicants know why they aren't meeting the cut in the first instance. But that is rarely done because you've invited a volume and therefore you bought a work capacity on yourself that you're not able to service professionally and with a brand reputation in mind. So there's one element of the hidden cost is the time expended in even just handling people that you don't necessarily want to progress. Let's assume you're managing the people that you progress. But the other hidden cost is, who haven't you gone and spoken to about your opportunity? What opportunity are you missing in the people that are out there that have chosen for whatever reason not to respond to your advert, and how much more might they bring to the process and indeed the role in due course?
And there are so many people that probably you think if you're doing it yourself, or they're not movable, they've been there forever, that again using somebody like you can sort of tease people away. I mean, I think the big challenge for potential applicants is they're making themselves look a little bit special and almost impossible not to be progressed to the interview stage. Yeah. Sort of with this in mind, any listeners out there, how do people make their CV stand out from the rest?
Well,
that's the magic sprinkle.
It's a great question, because the answer is it isn't CV alone any longer.
Yep.
And you know, back in the day where I was going through my milk round of applying to getting on for 14, 15 businesses, it was all handwritten application with a cover letter with a CV. And that was kind of the show in town of how you presented yourself and packaged yourself. There's many more accompanying parts to the CV. But with regard to the CV, the right way, particularly if you're in sales relationship channels, to consider a CV is, it's your sales document, it's your sales pro forma. Yeah. It is your chance to share, articulate why you will bring value to whoever the reader is. And with that, bear in mind, each reader might be looking for slightly different parts of value, and therefore you might want to just have a CV that's flexed to the particular recipient. But I think you have to look at it. It isn't a chronological sequence of responsibilities and facts that support what you've done, but it's an expression of how well you've done what you've done. And in my view, your first page really should have an opening gateway into announcing, here's who I am and here's what I think my skills look like, and then four or five really punchy, ideally quantifiable performance related achievements over my career. I've delivered this, I've delivered that. This is what I've impacted. This is the value I've created, which in effect tie directly back to why I can claim I have those skills, because the evidence of what those skills have delivered is directly below it.
Yeah, I think that's
it's all in the page one.
So to me, that looks like, if I'm thinking in layman's terms, mission statement, your own mission statement, your USPs, closing statement, interview me or miss out.
Yeah, absolutely. So think of it in product terms. You know, what's the old saying? Benefits sell, features
tell. And benefits, yep.
Features tell, benefits sell. The features of your career are some of the detail and the chronology and a little bit of perhaps more granular detail, but the absolute benefits are what you've delivered.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what sells.
I think that's a really, really priceless tip. I want to move on slightly, because I know that you're a big supporter of everything relating to the challenges of mental health. And not only, I think I'm right in saying that you're a signatory to the Mortgage Industry Mental Health Charter, and something I'm going to talk to Jason Berry on another episode in this series about. But also, I think you've recently completed a mental health first aid course.
I did.
Why is this something that's close to your heart? And why is it so important that we recognise and support the wide-ranging challenges this presents, not only to the mortgage sector, but to life as a whole?
Well, I've said this before, life comes at you fast, doesn't it? And it seems to be coming at you even faster, what with, you know, horrifying world news, all the different...
Frightening.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And you know, there's some fundamental challenges to humanity going on right now. I think, undoubtedly, whilst it wasn't the reason to step into the mental health first aid program, just going through the process of that program has helped me find the way to collate and order my thoughts and manage some of the anger, really, that societal issues have jarred and triggered in me. But actually, my fundamental motive for doing it was twofold. First of all, very cognizant of certain scenarios that sadly have seen people that I've had attachment with in aspects of my life have both not just suicidal thoughts, but ultimately end up having their own lives ended that way, which is, you know, poignant and emotionally very, very difficult to process, given what you could see as the front of that person rather than clearly what was going on. But and this was the real sort of moment that it dawned on me I needed to take a step towards being able to manage it better. The nature of the relationships I engender, particularly with candidates, where it is about trust, it is about transparency. If I know the whole you, I am going to be able to give you a better view of how you take your career forward. When you push into some of the questioning routes I really like to push into, because of this desire to get to what makes a person tick, what are their behaviours, what are their attitudes, rather than just concentrating on knowledge, you actually do open up some conversations that throw out things that I was not as well prepared for as I'd like to have been. And my mantra, really from the first day of recognising what recruitment gave me as this opportunity, probably 2-3 years into my journey, was that every single conversation you have is a moment of truth. It's an investment in your community. It allows you, if you do it right, to take a building block towards what your end goal is. And even if that might be 5 years in the future, the phrase you have to have in your mind is, leave someone better off for the interaction they've just had with you on whatever level that is. And that might be a little bit of coaching, a little bit of advice. That might be listening and just absorbing what that person's going through and potentially being able to give them a little bit of supportive perspective. But there were so many things that I feel now I've reflected back on conversations and subsequent to shaping myself as a place that can be considered safe to have these conversations. Some of the conversations I've heard, Rob, to be quite frank, tell me that the industry needs to do more. Not in some of the brilliant initiatives that Jason are doing alone. It needs to do more to realise it's creating some of the anxieties and the stresses itself. And I'm very, very alive to that. And having the toolkit now that the Mental Health First Aid programme gives you, I feel much more complete in inviting people to open up to me, knowing that if I happen to invite something that is bigger than I ever estimated it might be, I can actually help now.
That's brilliant, because it really is good to talk about. I mean, I would be surprised if there are not too many people out there that aren't already in your black book. But if anyone listening is feeling maybe a little stale or frustrated in the current role and maybe considering that career move and feel that they've got something that you can help them with and develop further, how do people find out more about you and Virtus Search, and how can they get in touch?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because one of my statements of intent is I don't advertise to fulfill roles. So there is an element of I'm going to find you rather than necessarily you find me.
I get that.
That I have to manage carefully how many people find me, because when I'm in delivery mode, I have to do the right things. I have to apply a method. I have to engage with my network. And it is quite time heavy, and therefore there isn't as much capacity, particularly with responsibilities to my dad that I have to weave into what I do with work. Now he's 90 and on his own. So there is an element of how do I engage with this person? Well, first of all, I'll always treat people with exactly the same honest intent that I treat life, which is I'll tell you what you can expect from me, and if that's somehow impacted by my commitments, you'll have to accept that. But it's given to you in good faith. But again, if I can give you a quick appraisal, I'll try and make you feel better for the experience and at least give you something to take from that conversation. But I think the people I resonate most with, and the people I had most value with, I sort of have two open questions, really, that I love people to explore in themselves. And I think if you answer either of these questions with what I think are the potential answers that people skirt over on a day-to-day basis because they've got stuff to do and they don't take the moment of reflection, ask yourself, what do you want to, or what do you imagine the next 12 months in your current role look like? Just ask yourself that question. And if within that question you then ask yourself, how many more skills, how much more profile, how much more ability will I create within this role to consider what my next step is? If the answer to that question is, I don't think I'm going to be able to add that much more other than just I'm in the same job in 12 months' time, I think that's when we ought to be talking, because that's where I can really leverage into the knowledge and the experiences I've got of helping others' careers, but actually put some real signposts and some action planning into place with you to say, here's what you've got to look to, here's what your almost your homework is to take away to build into how you go about doing your job. And on the basis of doing those things, let's have a quarterly review and make sure that as that trajectory moves, I'm keeping you abreast of where I think the openings are going to look like. So, yeah, I think via LinkedIn, via my website, via my mobile, you know, I'll always take a call. I'll always respond to a person. I can't own your career for you. I can only show you what the tools are to help you own.
So come on, as we sort of finish off, time flies when you're having fun, two old mates catching up. I want to ask you some quick fire questions, Pete.
Do it.
Just that might get us to know a little bit more about you. Go on then, knowing that this is one of your favourites as well, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, well, you've probably been in the audience for a couple. I view karaoke as a real interesting medium, metaphor for other things in life that I've always enjoyed challenging myself with. It depends who you're following is the answer to the question. If you're following someone who's really good, you have to go comedy, because I just can't reach a level that is musically of a standard. So I'd go for Do Yo Want Me Babby, a Black Country version of the Human League classic, Yo Corey Love, a Phil Collins classic. But if
Boston,
I was happy. Cracking, eh? If I was following someone that actually perhaps thought I could come and deliver something that was of that level, I'd have to go to Kingston Town, Three Little Birds. Yeah, that's sort of where almost every single word is already in my brain, because I listened to it so much in the 80s that, 90s with Kingston, that, yeah, I could do it in my sleep and back to front and...
And I've seen you do it. I've seen you drag me down karaoke steps. It's frightening. Favourite takeaway? It's got to be a curry, hasn't it, with you being
there for me? Yeah, but that's, then you don't have the balti dish experience, do you, if you're taking it away? So it does detract. Absolutely top draw fish and chips. Very partial, but not just
gravy.
Never with fish and chips. Come on.
Fish and chips and gravy.
If I'm going a pie, yeah, gravy and mushies. But no. Pickle onion and... all that. But I think having previously been programmed to almost answer that question with kebab, having been to Turkey several times, but particularly Istanbul, the kebabs in this country just
don't cut it, do they?
Don't cut it, don't compete, and hence they're gone. So probably chili and black bean. Yeah,
nice.
I think that's the one.
Nice. Come on, to finish off with, give me a fun fact about you that nobody knows.
Nobody? My son will be listening to this and he knows it, but I'm not so sure many others will. I completed within three crazy... it was two crazy years for the two things, and then unbeknown to me, the third one was going to follow, because at the time I did the first one, the other one wasn't really on the agenda. So in no particular order, I ran a marathon... Sandwell Marathon and completed it in 4 hours 14.
Fantastic.
I'd set myself a goal to have it done before Guinness was going to weigh me down too much. I did a static line parachute jump for Mencap the year after, from 2,500 feet, which was amazing until landing. And then, lo and behold, on my honeymoon, my wife and I did a bungee jump individual bungee jumps, I hasten to add. She wouldn't have had me weighing her down. I did a bungee jump in Thailand from 380 feet, I think it was, which was, yeah, glad I've done it. Never again, thank you very much.
Fantastic. There are three facts that I certainly didn't know about you. Pete, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been great to get to know just a little bit more about you and also to hear how recruitment from all parties' sides has changed over the years. From an employer's side, getting recruitment right first time is fundamental to a business's success. The costs of making the wrong hire go way beyond financial implications. There's a vicious cycle of lost productivity and an impact on team morale, as well as the opportunity cost of losing the desired momentum that new energy and ideas would bring. There are also costs of failing to ensure that you're exploring how a great diversity in the workforce adds value. If anyone's looking to recruit in the mortgage space, speak to Pete. It will be a conversation that will without doubt reap you countless rewards. Last but certainly not least, it's great to hear your passion for giving back to support those who are maybe facing difficult times. Anyone listening who is maybe struggling at the minute, have a look at Pete's website. There's a great page called Safe Space. For some, sharing and talking about such personal issues isn't for the workplace, and it can be difficult to feel in that safe space where matters that feel inequitable can be discussed confidentially and without the fear of reprisal. Maybe a conversation with Pete would help. Pete, thanks again, and I hope to be belting out a specials number and enjoying a pint of Bathams with you sometime very soon.